The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov, yeah, the fast of the 17th of Tammuz. So obviously a fast day, a regular working day, but nonetheless one of the shorter fast days, leading up, of course, in 3 weeks' time to Tisha B'Av, which is one of the two 25-hour fast days that we have in our calendar, commemorating apparently the breach of the walls of Jerusalem prior to the destruction of the Second Temple. And, of course, also it is believed that this marks the day on which Moses broke the tablets of the law. So a few interesting events that happened on this fast day, the 17th of Tammuz. And, of course, it marks the beginning of the three-week period, which is a semi-mourning period as we lead up to Tisha B'Av. But I was very interested to see this this news item, Israel Unveiled. Does that make any sense to you? By Lois Obala, who had a very interesting trip to Israel and had some very interesting points to make.
Yeah, I did hear about it. I haven't seen it. But apparently it's quite something quite amazing.
Yeah, I think it's worth watching, Howard. I mean, maybe if you haven't seen it, it is on I-24 News. It is worth watching. I'll send you a link and maybe you can post it for other listeners to watch as well. Certainly something that is of interest.
All right, let's just take a look at some of the news stories that are taking place across Israel at the moment. Mahmoud Abbas has told Russian President Vladimir Putin that he's ready for direct negotiations for Israel. Could this really result in direct negotiations?
I'm not sure is the simple answer. And it's very interesting that the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas is using the office of Vladimir Putin during a phone call that happened yesterday to relay this message. It's already the second time within the space of about 10 days that this message has gone out. The main issue that we're seeing now is that whereas Israel's support comes mainly from the United States, the Palestinian Authority is not prepared to place any trust or reliance upon the offices of the United States. And hence, the message is being sent out through people like Vladimir Putin, through the quartet. Of course, the quartet also includes the United States. The quartet, just to remind people, is made up of the United States, the European Union, the United Nations, and Russia. And of course, because all of those European Union nations are involved, and mainly because Russia is a very strong partner within that quartet makeup, the Palestinians feel that the U.S. influence is somewhat marginalized in that particular forum, and therefore, even though the U.S. is not completely excluded, but it certainly will not necessarily be calling the shots if any talks that take place come under the sponsorship of the quartet, as opposed to under the sponsorship of the U.S. administration, which has really been the direction that we've seen things moving in up until now. If we can call it moving, I don't know that they've really been moving in any direction at all, but certainly the only efforts that seem to have been made over the past, let's say, 3 or 4 years have really come from the U.S. administration. So it's interesting as to the fact that Mahmoud Abbas is making the statement for the second time, and one wonders what's lying behind his feeling that he now needs to progress this matter, whereas for the last lengthy period of time, I don't even know how long, 4, 5, 6 years maybe, he really hasn't seen any reason to cooperate with any peacemaking efforts whatsoever. Does the idea of annexation make him feel like he might be missing the boat a little bit? I'm just putting that question out there because I'm trying to make sense of why he's suddenly jumping up and now for the second time within the space of 2 weeks, again, making clear that he would quite like to sit down and talk directly with Israel as opposed to all the rejections that he's been issuing over the past few years. So an interesting development, not sure that it's necessarily going to take us anywhere, but definitely a slightly different element that we see on the diplomatic horizon at the moment.
Yeah, we just always wonder about the motives behind it. If it results in peace.
Unfortunately.
And,
yeah.
And a greater peace, you know, some form of an understanding, that would be absolutely wonderful. But, just a little bit skeptical about that. Lawyers representing Prime Minister Netanyahu in his bribery case have resigned from representing him. What on earth?
Yeah, no end to the drama in this particular case. It's all about money, really, all about money. And ironically, it's all about money because the lead lawyer in this case, a lawyer by the name of Micha Fetman, has been representing Prime Minister Netanyahu and also represented him at the first hearing that took place back at the end of May. He only joined the legal team relatively recently. After previous lawyers had also resigned. So this is somebody who's been brought in after other people who had already left the team. But it's really all about the money. And Prime Minister Netanyahu has been unashamedly raising funds from all comers, from anybody who's prepared to donate to his cause in order to fight this particular court case. And in particular, there's a tycoon by the name of Spencer Partridge who has agreed to put up 10 million shekels to pay for legal fees for Prime Minister Netanyahu. The problem, of course, is that Spencer Partridge also has been called to give evidence in the same case. So unsurprisingly, the Attorney General has decided that this is not okay for Spencer Partridge to be financing the Prime Minister's legal fees when he's also a party to the case itself. And in fact, the Attorney General has ruled that he will only approve a 2 million shekel amount to be given to the Prime Minister's legal fees and only as a loan rather than as a donation. So the Prime Minister is not particularly happy about this. And of course, it's brought into question all manner of detail about the Prime Minister's personal wealth and whether he can really afford the case and whether it's imperative that he has to raise money in order to pay for lawyers. So all of this is really under the spotlight right now. And of course, the Prime Minister has cited the case of Ehud Olmert, who was a Prime Minister before him, also had to go through a legal case and also raised money from outsiders, got donations in order to fund his legal case. The difference in Olmert's situation, according to what the Attorney General has said, is that Olmert resigned as Prime Minister before he fought the case. And therefore, by the time the money came to his legal cause to help his legal fees, he already was no longer Prime Minister. Whereas, of course, Netanyahu currently still is Prime Minister, and therefore it's considered to be inappropriate for him to be raising large sums of money to fund his legal fees while he is still Prime Minister, and therefore theoretically could further the interests of those individuals in his position as Prime Minister in the event that his legal case is successful. So lots and lots of spotlight on the case itself, but not on the facts of the case this time, rather on the financing of the case, which is a very fascinating situation. The Prime Minister apparently is currently without a lead lawyer, and the next hearing is due to take place pretty soon. So I think it's only another like 10 days or 2 weeks before the next hearing is due to take place. It's going to be interesting to see what happens next.
Yeah, but it actually could work in his favor in some strange way, but let's see what happens. A helicopter carrying the IDF chief of general staff suffered a serious technical malfunction. What happened, Anthony?
Well, what we hear about is that the helicopter that was had the chief of general staff on board actually suffered a failure of both engines while it was flying during a routine flight, we understand. The helicopter was in the air, and both engines apparently failed. It's not exactly clear how the pilot managed to get out of that situation, but we understand that the helicopter did lose altitude and was down to almost 100 meters from the ground, or maybe even less, before they had done something before the pilots managed to respond to it, and apparently the engines were reactivated and the helicopter was stabilized. So that could have been a pretty serious situation. And in fact, the Air Force is apparently investigating to try to examine all the decisions that were made during the incident and exactly what the circumstances were. But obviously, this is a very, very serious situation. The Chief of General Staff is by definition required to fly by helicopter a lot of the time. He's flying from one end of the country to the other. He's going to places which are not easily accessible by road necessarily in order to examine combat units and what they're up to on the borders of Israel. So there is really little choice but for the chief of general staff to be able to have access to a helicopter. And in fact, I'm not exactly sure where Aviv Kochavi lives, but usually when a person is appointed chief of general staff, they make sure that there's a helicopter landing pad quite nearby where he lives in order to allow him to take off by helicopter almost from his home when need be in order to reach the furthest corners of Israel. The helicopter itself is a Yanshuf helicopter, literally meaning an owl, Yanshuf. Mm-hmm. And apparently at the end of the day, they continue to fly even despite this particular technical malfunction.
And it couldn't have been.
Unfortunately.
And one of our listeners
saying, fortunately, everything worked out well in the end. Yeah,
it couldn't. Could it possibly have been some form of sabotage? We've seen so much going on between Iran and Israel, but it's unlikely it would have been that subtle, would it have?
Well, no word has been said. In fact, whoever that listener was is not the only person who was suspecting that it might have been some act of terror or some attempt to risk the life of the chief of general staff. It would surprise me if that was the case, because I think that the IDF is very, very careful about things like this. But I guess nothing can be ruled out. Certainly no word on it officially being made by the IDF, and certainly no suspicion even being cast, at least in the press. One doesn't know whether that's because of censorship or whether that's just because there is no story to tell on that particular front. So anyway, fortunately, all is well that ends well. Aviv Kochavi seems to be continuing his job as usual, and the helicopters are continuing to fly. There's been no grounding of helicopters or anything as a result of the incident, and so everything seems to be continuing as was the case before.
Well, they make them tough there. They have a helicopter accident, get up, brush off the dust and carry on your day job. So, different kind of an approach. Jordan has demanded that Israel stops construction work at the Western Wall. Do they have the authority to demand this?
Well, this is, I think, the interesting thing, and it's created a lot of consternation, particularly amongst some right-wingers who feel that, the whole Jordanian involvement in general in Jerusalem is unjustified, and that Israel, as the governing authority within this country, should assume control, full control of Jerusalem. And of course, the slight complication is that at the time of the founding of the State of Israel, the control over the Muslim religious sites in Jerusalem and also elsewhere, and in particular the Temple Mount site, and I think we need to, emphasize that point, was granted to the Waqf, the religious council that is under the chairmanship of the King of Jordan. And so as a result of that particular involvement, the Jordanians feel that they have the right from time to time to make comments about things that Israel is doing on its own territory, even outside of the places that have been formally designated as Muslim religious sites, such as the Temple Mount and other mosques in and around the area of Jerusalem. But the Jordanian Foreign Ministry decided that they would criticize and condemn the work that's being carried out at the Kotel, at the Western Wall in Jerusalem, which it actually interestingly referred to as the Western Wall of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is an interesting way of thinking about things, because the Western Wall that we know is not even the Western Wall of the Temple, but rather the Western Wall of the compound of the Temple, the Temple Mount area. The Temple itself was built within that area. And so what we call the Western Wall is really just the outside, the perimeter wall of where the Temple once stood. Right. It's certainly not the Western Wall of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, even though the Al-Aqsa Mosque is constructed on the Temple Mount itself. But of course, as a result of the Waqf's control over these Muslim sites and the fact that they have a certain say in things that happen there, they felt that they have the right to also make statements about what Israel is doing within its own areas. For example, that Kotel area is firmly designated as a Jewish area under the control of the government of the State of Israel, and certainly nothing to do with the Waqf for the Muslim Council under the chairmanship of the King of Jordan. Having said that, of course, this just generates more antagonism every time the Jordanians feel the right to have some involvement in what Israel is doing within its own sovereign territory. It just creates a little bit more anger amongst those people who feel that Israel should never have granted the Jordanians any involvement, and the Waqf is just, unjustified in having any say in anything that goes on in Jerusalem. So once again, just another interesting day in the Middle East where, of course, these conflicts take place. The Jordanians will continue to have their say because, of course, the Jordanians represent the Muslim world where this is concerned, given that the Al-Aqsa Mosque is considered to be the third holiest site in the Muslim religion. So the Jordanians have a kind of a worldwide responsibility within the Muslim
representative
community.
A representative position.
Absolutely. So they feel that they have the need to make these public statements from time to time in order to show their fellow Muslims that they are taking this role very seriously.
Indeed. Time is 8 o'clock. Antony Reich, thank you as always. Wishing you a fantastic weekend. A Shabbat Shalom. Just stay safe and stay healthy. And we'll catch you on Monday morning at the same time.